Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. Watch, chop, retrofit.
All right, so as this episode will probably be going kerplunk on Sunday, I just wanted to wish Happy Father's Day to my dad and to dads everywhere.
Yeah, mine too.
Sweet, that was a very hearty endorsement of your father. But this is not a Hallmark podcast. Welcome to Season 7, Episode 5 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs...
like us.
...decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
Travis Treaty, a.k.a. The Magnificent Travin, a.k.a. Train Robin Travis.
Oh, yes. And I am joined, as always, here in the shop by my co-host and co-producer... William H. Shawnee, a.k.a. Little Big Sean. And I'm... Oh, also, we are not joined by a guest today because she decided to go out and have some fire water during day and was not able to record with us. But if Chelsea had been here, her nicknames would be The Outlaw Josie Chels and Wild Chell Hickok. Further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remake, reboot, sequel-dependent cinematic culture. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
Damn right. And I want to point out an example of a bad remake, just so the listeners know, like, what we're making fun of. So my example is the 2000 remake of Get Carter.
Ooh.
With Sly Stallone. It's an unnecessary remake of the 1972 original starring Michael Caine. All right, so that'll bring us into movie news. And this is where Sean and I try to pay attention to stories that are pertinent to our program and that our listeners might find interesting. And we're going to start it off with a couple of RIPs, unfortunately. First, we've got Pat Brimer, who was 70, died of heart disease, and they were the puppeteer for the gopher in Caddyshack. Also, Team America World Police, Mark Gurman, and also Short Circuit.
I think it's a male, to answer your question.
Gotcha. So rest in peace to him and rest in power. Also, RIP to Ian Holm.
Yeah.
The great Ian Holm. He was Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings. He was an android in Alien. He was also in Chariots of Fire. He died at the age of 88, and it was Parkinson's?
Complications due to Parkinson's disease.
So, once again, rest in peace and rest in power to both of them. The next story, Oscars 2021 is set to be postponed and the eligibility window extended. Yes, I think it's good that they're postponing it. Yes, I think it's good that they're extending the eligibility window. But I think that any form of the Academy Awards ceremony this year that is not a virtual Academy Awards, an online thing where everybody who would have been in the room is just on the internet, I think that would be a tragedy. And so that being said, I told you this the other day, if they do it any other way, I'm boycotting. Okay. I will not be watching. I will not be making picks. And I will not be doing my annual Oscar bet with my lovely wife, Michelle.
Wow.
Drink.
Wow.
And it's not just because she always wins. Next up, NBA players may get to see Black Widow early. Now, this is because the NBA is soon going to resume the rest of the 2020 season in Orlando at the Disney Resort in a bubble. And they've said that they're going to be providing theater experiences for the NBA players and their families while they're there. And one of the films that they're going to be able to see is Black Widow.
That ain't right. I mean, I guess it's cool that they're entertaining, but, you know, that's kind of shitty for the rest of us.
Well, it's a good thing that I just signed a free agent contract, and I'm going to be the starting point guard for the Charlotte Bobcats. Wait, no, they're the Charlotte Hornets again. Clive Barker is suing for the rights to Hellraiser. Now, that's the original Hellraiser, Hellraiser 1, and he may actually regain them in 2021.
I think that's great.
Good for him.
Yep.
All right, this is some local movie news.
Yeah.
This one's really exciting. You just sent this my way today. There's a farm in Conway that's starting up a drive-in movie summer series starting today. And I'm going to click on the link because I think we need to...
While you're doing that, we'll give credit to our news hound, Chelsea.
Oh, did she find that one?
She's the one that picked up on that, yeah.
Nice. Okay, so it's called Thompson Farm at Brickyard Plantation presents drive-in movie summer series. So they're doing... today, they're doing Grease. Next Friday, they're doing Trolls. On July 3rd, Footloose. July 10th, The Secret Life of Pets 2. July 17th, Dirty Dancing, and I think that's the one that we've got our eyes on. And then also on July 24th, Frozen, and July 31st, Rocky.
I like how they kind of went adult kid.
Yeah, definitely that's alternating.
Pretty smart.
So we're gonna have to go check that out. Maybe we can get an interview with the owners.
Oh, that'd be cool.
All right, finally, this one is a huge story.
This is the news of the week.
News of the week. Do you want to present this one?
I don't have all the facts in front of me, but I'll give the nutshell. We have an independent filmmaker who jokingly with a friend said, you know, hey, if we rented out a movie theater and released our movie, we would be the number one box office draw for the week. And sure enough, that's what they did. They've released a film short, independent film, in Florida, I believe. And they are now the number one box office draw.
This is coming to us from screencrush.com.
Unsubscribe was the name of the movie.
Unsubscribe. And, okay, so last month, Nielsen said that he and a YouTuber, Eric Tabach, T-A-B-A-C-H, were chatting about how theaters across the country were closed due to the pandemic. We joked any film we put in a theater would instantly top the box office. Realizing the unique situation presented a loophole, we hatched a plan, he said. They wrote Unsubscribe and shot it all on Zoom. Then they rented a local theater and screened it, buying all of the seats themselves. And lo and behold, they ended up with the number one movie in America. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think it's clever and cool, and it's a little...
innovative.
It's a bright spot in an otherwise pretty bleak new movie landscape that we're facing.
And it's also a way of hacking the system.
Oh, yeah.
While the system is kind of... has a bug in it right now, it's vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so they were able to take advantage of that. I think that's all for movie news this week, right?
Yeah.
So that will bring us, as soon as that phone starts to ring, oh, there it is, into the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Namaste, choppers. I really enjoyed Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband's story about their introduction to Bollywood films. So Sean, thanks for reaching out to them for a little background into the genre. Denise Cronenberg passed away due to complications from old age. She was 81. The third Christ in Three Christs is Bradley Whitford. When I was digging around on Netflix for Bollywood films, The Help came up in the search. WTF Netflix. I'm off to fall down a Bollywood dance video rabbit hole. See y'all next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. We appreciate it. And it sounds like Netflix was trying to serve you a shit pie. That will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, which brings us to the theme of the episode. And I guess that I chose this topic because it's a genre or a subgenre that my dad and I watched a lot together. And so we're going to be talking about revisionist Westerns. And this is, like I said, a subgenre of the Western that traces its roots to the 1960s, early 70s. And this is a time when the aesthetic started to change, right? What are we talking about here?
We're talking about the anti-hero, the flawed characters on both sides.
The sympathetic villain.
Yes, very much so. As well as some of the peeling back the layer of some of the ugliness that was the Wild West.
They started to depict a morally questionable world where the heroes and villains oftentimes resembled each other, i.e. the anti-hero or the sympathetic villain, more closely than they had previously been shown. The concept of right and wrong became blurred in a world where actions could no longer be said to be good or bad. Whereas in a majority of the classical Westerns films, the ethics were clear and defined in black and white. The revisionist Western film looked to paint a moral gray area where people had to adapt in order to survive. This led to depictions of outlaws such as Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, in which protagonists of the films of that film are outlaw bank robbers. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a post-Western, anti-Western era in cinema. So, that being said, would you like to give us your midnight double feature, Sean?
Sure, let's do the midnight double feature.
And this is a segment where we each on the panel, Chelsea included, try to pick two movies within the subject of this week's episode, this week being revisionist Westerns, and talk about why they would be a good pairing to be shown back-to-back in a public setting. And what did you pick?
I went with two films starring Guy Pearce.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And the first one is from 1999. It's called Ravenous. And it's very loosely based on the Donner Party.
Oh, boy.
That being the...
That's when the cannibalism started.
Right. That being the doomed party that were trying to take a shortcut and ended up kind of having to eat each other to survive. But that's where the similarity ends. It's more about Robert Carlyle's character, who is a cannibal.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the story from the perspective of, like, I just came back from the Donner Party. You got to come help us. We're stuck in this cave.
You got to come check out this party.
Well, all right. That's where it ends. From there, it turns into this crazy shit show. He's really just this cannibal who's trying to con people into coming to his cave so he can eat them.
Where do the zombies come into play?
Well, it's not zombies. It's Wendigos.
Years ago, I wrote the chorus to a song called Zombie Apocalypse. Would you like to hear it?
No.
Come on.
Go ahead. You want...
It's a zombie apocalypse. Yes, they are hungry. Yes, they are ravenous.
Okay. And you didn't get a record deal?
No. I don't know why.
Shocked. This has Guy Pearce, Robert Carlyle, David Arquette. It has a lot of names that you would know. Jeremy Davies is in it. Neil McDonough, who I've used in recasts recently. The problem I have with this movie, though, is that the tone's not right. It's kind of an action, adventure, comedy, Western horror.
Is it a Bollywood movie?
No. But it's got a lot of crazy things going against it. The tone, the music... And the credits, they kind of give you the idea that these guys are being really tongue-in-cheek about the way this film's presented, but there's a certain seriousness to the subject matter that I just think clashes with that whole idea. And plus, it wasn't funny. So I really, okay. Really murky in terms of my opinion of this movie. But I'm following it with 2005's The Proposition.
Okay, I've seen this one.
This is a film written by Nick Cave, the musician, set in Australia, starring Ray Winstone, Guy Pearce, Emily Watson, and it is about a gang that are wanted by the law. Ray Winstone plays the sheriff, and he is trying to cut a deal. He proposes something.
Right.
They capture the youngest brother of the gang, who's not really bad. He's not a bad guy. He's a little...
he's just caught up with the wrong crowd.
Family being what it is, but he's just not cut out for prison. He's not cut out for that kind of life. And so Ray Winstone cuts a deal with Guy Pearce. He says, you go kill your older brother, the one who's really the bad guy, and we'll let your younger brother go. And then, of course, all things go to hell because other forces work against Ray Winstone, that being people that are over him politically. They kind of circumvent him, and they whip the young man who's in prison with 100 lashes and puts him at death's door. Guy Pierce, of course, is conflicted with whether or not to shoot his brother or to come down and try to break his brother, younger brother, out of jail. And ultimately, Ray Winstone is stuck at the end of the film in this dilemma. And I don't want to give away too much. It's very grisly.
Yes.
Gritty. And there are no good guys in this movie. And it very much typifies that revisionist Western, even though it is set in the Australian outback.
So one thing I want to point out is that the subgenre of revisionist Westerns coming out of Australia is sometimes referred to as meat pie Westerns, as opposed to the spaghetti Westerns right. and whatnot. Also, I don't want our audience to confuse revisionist Westerns with revisionist history, the propagandist
practice.
Oh,
no, not at all. This is not meant to twist what happened.
Right. So my midnight double feature is a couple of movies that my dad loves, and I think that they're really good examples of this genre. The first one is called Unforgiven from 1992. It's got a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was directed by, written, and starring Clint Eastwood, who played a major role in this subgenre as well. The Outlaw Josie Wales, all the spaghetti westerns, The Man with No Name, and this was kind of like his capper on that, the end of his era in that. And so when a prostitute named Delilah Fitzgerald, played by Anna Thompson, is disfigured by a pair of cowboys in Big Whiskey, Wyoming. They say disfigured, they cut her up.
They cut her teats.
Yeah, and her face, and it's really savage. Her fellow brothel workers, including Strawberry, who's played by Frances Fisher, who was Clint Eastwood's partner for 5 years from 1990 to 95, and is the mother of their daughter, Francesca Eastwood.
Oh, okay.
They post a reward for their murder, the murder of the two cowboys, that is, much to the displeasure of Sheriff Little Bill Daggett, played by Gene Hackman. And this is a situation where the lawman is the antagonist
right.
in the film, who doesn't allow vigilantism in his town. The two groups of gunfighters, one led by former bandit William Money, played by Clint Eastwood, and his partner Ned Logan, played by Morgan Freeman, the other by Florid English Bob, played by Richard Harris, come to collect the reward, clashing with each other and the sheriff. Really dark material, especially for the time. In 1992, I was 12 years old, and I'd seen a lot of classic Westerns, but this was kind of an eye-opener for me where you could flip the script, you know?
Yeah, this is my favorite revisionist Western. I saw it in the theaters when I was in college, and it's just...
It's so good.
It's really a fantastic movie, and as much any misgivings I have about Clint Eastwood today, he was on his game with
this
film.
He gets a pass with this one.
Yeah, this film, sure. He was right on target. No pun intended.
All right, so I'm going to pair that with Tombstone. This is probably my dad's favorite movie of all time. From 1993, it's got a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think it could be more than that.
Yeah.
It was directed by George P. Cosmatos. And in this picture, Wyatt Earp, played by Kurt Russell, and his brothers, Morgan, played by the late, great Bill Paxton, and Virgil, played by Sam Elliott, who's somehow still with us, have left their gunslinger ways behind them to settle down and start a business in the town of Tombstone, Arizona. While they aren't looking to find trouble, trouble soon finds them when they become targets of the ruthless cowboy gang. Now, together with Wyatt's best friend, Doc Holliday, played by Val Kilmer, in probably the top two performances of his career.
I agree.
I say this and The Doors are his two best roles. And this is probably better. It's more of a vulnerable role, and I think it was amazing. The brothers pick up their guns once more to restore order to a lawless land. Great supporting cast in this movie. In addition to the actors that we've already mentioned, we've also got Dana Delaney from China Beach.
Yeah.
We've got Michael Biehn, who was Reese in Terminator. We've got the late Powers Booth. We've got Billy Bob Thornton, Stephen Lang, Michael Rooker, Jason Priestley, Thomas Hayden Church, Robert Mitchum, Charlton Heston, Harry Carey Jr., and Billy Zane.
Wow.
So the movie itself is great. The supporting cast makes it even better.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's going to be my midnight double feature of revisionist westerns, and obviously highly recommended on both accounts. So, shall we get into our feature segment?
Let's do it.
It's time for the recast. And this is where we go all the way around the corral and we hypothetically recast a picture with contemporary actors. And the first one is going to be from 1973. It's called Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. It's got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Sam Peckinpah, who we've spoke of before here on the show. And I know you considered it to be kind of a long haul.
Yeah, it felt 2 hours felt like 2 weeks to me.
Gotcha. So it's the same story that you've seen in almost every cinematic depiction of Billy the Kid. But I think that the performances in this one, especially the James Coburn performance as Pat Garrett, really stand out.
Yeah, because he's conflicted about the grim task that he has.
Exactly. So we've got Sheriff Pat Garrett, played by James Coburn, is ordered by Governor Wallace, played by Jason Robards, to go after the outlaw Billy the Kid, played by Kris Kristofferson. A kind of pudgy Kris Kristofferson in this.
Yeah, there's something about his face that just really irked me.
It's probably why he grew that beard.
Yeah.
Because the cattle businessmen want him caught. Although Garrett and Billy are old friends, the lawman must abide by his duty. However, Garrett and his deputies have great difficulty catching Billy, who is very cunning. Along the way, Billy gains the assistance of Alias, played by Jennifer Garner. No, it was Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan plays Alias, and he also wrote and performed the soundtrack to this movie, which is probably why he got the role in the first place.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of screen time.
The director felt that Bob Dylan was pushed upon him by the studios.
I can see that.
So the soundtrack, I did want to mention that seminar favorite, Wagon Wheel, the song made famous by Old Crow Medicine Show, was actually, the chorus was written for the soundtrack and never finished. And then Secor, or whatever his name is from Old Crow, picked it up and fleshed it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Bob Dylan's Alias character is a mysterious knife-wielding stranger. The film was noted for behind-the-scenes battles between Peckinpah and the studio, which was MGM. Soon after completion, the film was taken away from the director and substantially re-edited, resulting in a truncated version released to theaters and largely disowned by the cast and crew. Peckinpah's preview version was released on video in 1988, leading to a re-evaluation, with many critics hailing it as a mistreated classic and one of the era's best films. In 2005, a DVD of the film, distributed by Warner Brothers, was released containing the preview version as well as a new special edition which combined elements of the theatrical version, the preview edition, and the original version, and several new scenes never released from the previous versions. This third version of the film, known as the Special Edition, runs slightly shorter than the preview version. So the one we saw was the Special Edition, and it's slightly shorter than the preview version. Well,
thank God for small favors.
So I was going to say that one positive thing I took away was James Coburn's performance as Pat Garrett. You could really see the anguish and turmoil that he was feeling about having to track down his old friend. Shall we get into the roles that we're going to recast?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Let me get a quick sip of water here.
Excuse me. A tall drink of water.
That's sarsaparilla.
Why'd you steal my voice?
All right, so first we've got William H. Bonney, a.k.a. Billy the Kid, played by Kris Kristofferson, who was 37 at the time. We've got Pat Garrett, played by James Coburn, who was 45 at the time. We've got Alias, played by Bob Dylan, who was 32 at the time. And then we've got Governor Lew Wallace, played by Jason Robards, who was 51. Sound about right?
That is right.
All right, so who's your Billy the Kid?
All right, so this is a theme pick round. Actually, both of mine are theme picks today.
Nice.
My Billy the Kid. I went with a 43-year-old from Macon, Georgia. And he has been in very few things. Very, very few things. He's been on SNL as himself.
Okay.
But he's done a few music videos because he's a country music star. I went with Jason Aldean.
Oh, really? Interesting. Okay. All right. I wonder what your theme is.
Maybe.
All right. Well, my actor is 36 now. I've definitely chopped him before.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Logan Lucky, Black Klansman, and The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. It's Adam Driver.
Oh, nice.
And so I have, for just your pleasure, I have a picture of the actor, the actual figure,
wow,
and the actor who's going to be recast. All right, next up, we've got Pat Garrett, who was played by James Coburn, who was 45 at the time. Who were you thinking about for this one?
All right, so I went with a 48-year-old, and his acting resume is fairly short as well. But he does a really good job with some comedy and in his Nationwide commercials. I went with Brad Paisley.
Lil Sean.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so my Pat Garrett is 45 now. He was in The Hurt Locker. No, it's not Jeremy Renner.
Thank goodness.
He was in Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile as the Florida prosecutor. And he's also in Flight. His name is Brian Garrity. Brian Garrity.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I mostly went face value with this. I wanted to be a little bit gritty and rugged.
He even looks like the real Pat Garrett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And next, we've got Alias, played by Bob Dylan. And I'm wondering if we picked the same person for this.
I don't know, because this has kind of inspired my entire thing. My actor is 45 years old. He was in Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Okay.
He was in Cold Mountain.
Huh.
And he's done a few other things. He was in the Muppets TV series. Anyway, it's Jack White from the White Stripes.
Oh, nice, dude. I fucking love the White Stripes. I might have mentioned it before, but my lovely wife Michelle and I, got engaged at a performance of the White Stripes during the Seven Nation Army song, and I proposed to her and dropped the ring because everybody was like stomping along, but everybody stopped and pulled out their cell phones and helped me find it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good
and
score.
Oh, by the way, she said yes.
Yeah?
Yes. So we did not pick the same person.
Oh, good.
My Alias is 24 now. He's a little bit younger. He was in Lady Bird. He's in the upcoming Denis Villeneuve adaptation of Dune. And he is in talks to play Bob Dylan in Fox Searchlight's Going Electric. His name is Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, good.
He's very, very much a young Bob Dylan. I was surprised you didn't go with Jacob Dylan. Low-hanging fruit. All right, we got one more, right?
Yes.
That is Governor Lew Wallace, who's the one who sends Pat Garrett after Billy the Kid in the first place. And he was played by Jason Robards, who was 51 at the time. What were you thinking about for this one?
I went with a 53-year-old, and he has been in The Blind Side, Tomorrowland, but he was a complete bastard in Friday Night Lights. I went with Tim McGraw.
Tim McGraw, another country singer.
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. So that was your theme, right?
Yeah, country musicians. Singers. Well, musicians. Jack White, not really country.
He's a little bit country.
But he...
and a little bit rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah. He's just a big appreciator of music in general and curator of music.
My last actor, I did not... apparently, this was a gap in my notes. I did not get his age, but I think he is 51 now. He's in London is Falling and 300. His name is Gerard Butler. Gerard Butler is going to be my Governor Lew Wallace.
Well, that'll make Dana happy. That's one of her favorites.
Good. All right. So final thoughts on Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
I didn't really care for this. Mm-hmm. I understand a lot of the critical praise for it. I just didn't particularly enjoy it.
I gotcha. And I already mentioned the things that I liked about it. I think that it's going to be a light recommend from me, and it sounds like not a recommend from you.
It's a take it or leave it kind of thing for me.
Gotcha. Well, I think it's about time to go to intermission. So
let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves a saddle and some hardtack.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under reviewed.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it. And multiply
a Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
And we are back, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during the intermission. When we come back for intermission, what do we like to do?
Beer check-ins.
And I've got one that I feel is kind of on theme today.
I think it's very on theme.
It's called Amarillo Citra Eldorado India Pale Ale from Westbrook Brewing.
Oh, I see what you did there.
A local South Carolina brewery and one of the best in the state, I think. And so I'm going to crack that open, give us a little pour here. And while we're enjoying it, we're going to get into our 2020 movie marathon. And this is where Sean and Chelsea and I try to watch as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year. And this year, the goal being 366, since it is a leap year. And then we check those movies in on Letterboxd and also Twitter. I do mine under the Cinema Chop Shop handle, and yours are on what, Sean?
A windowless van.
And so what is your first check-in for this week, Sean?
All right, relevant to the theme of the show, I'm going to check in Little Big Man. This is a Western starring Dustin Hoffman. Mm-hmm. You've seen this.
I have, multiple times.
With one foot firmly planted in his adopted Cheyenne upbringing and the other planted in the world of the white man,
mm-hmm.
Little Big Man sees the good and bad of both. Or he could just be an old coot spinning a yarn.
Yes, it does go back and forth in terms of flashbacks, right? Most of the movie is flashbacks.
Yes.
And then I also think that this movie is unique for the time because of showing those two perspectives. The white man who is embraced by the Native Americans and adopts some of their culture, but also has foots in the past. Very similar to the story in Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. What do you think of the beer?
It's pretty good.
It was canned 1 month ago.
It's still hanging in there.
All right, so my first check-in for the 2020 movie marathon this week is going to be a film called Outback, and it's based on a true story. My review, I wish this was a horror about a sentient killer Subaru. Instead, two unprepared Americans already having relationship issues go off the grid or off the beaten path and get lost in Australia. And I don't recommend this movie because it's very frustrating. The whole time you're like, no, no, don't do that. Don't do that. No, you shouldn't do that. Don't turn that way, you know? And it just makes me mad because I'm a, I feel like I'm a very prepared person when I go on adventures, and they were not.
Ah.
All right, what do you got next?
All right, so this is another Western. You could call it revisionist, but it is based on the true story, as I guess our subject matter of our recast is. This is called Woman Walks Ahead. It stars Jessica Chastain and Sam Rockwell.
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with The Girl Walks Behind.
No. This is from 2017. She plays a painter and art enthusiast.
Okay.
Who is going to go out to the settlement and paint a portrait of Sitting Bull.
Nice.
And in doing so, she runs afoul of the military camp because they're trying to push a treaty through, mm-hmm. and it's a bad deal for the Native Americans, and Sitting Bull knows this, and he's kind of turning all the other tribes against signing the treaty. And this is history, so I'm not spoiling anything.
Right.
They didn't sign the treaty, and the Americans pushed it through anyway and essentially gave the Native Americans the shitty land, and they kind of sort of ran for the hills, and the Americans chased them down and slaughtered about 300 women and children. They call it the Battle at Wounded Knee,
mm-hmm.
even though it wasn't much of a battle.
Yeah.
But anyway, I really like Jessica Chastain, and I like Sam Rockwell
Agreed.
A lot. But they couldn't keep me interested in this very, very sleepy flick.
Gotcha.
Unfortunately.
I like both of those actors as well, and I also I identify a lot with the struggle of the Native American. I know it's a very white thing to say about having whatever percentage of Native American blood, but I do have some, and it's always been something that I've been very sympathetic towards. So my next check-in is going to be The Five Bloods. This is the new Spike Lee joint that came out last week on Netflix, and it's a very powerful story. It's about four black men who are traveling back to Vietnam 50 some odd years later, and they're going to try and locate the Fifth Blood's remains. Now, the Fifth Blood was their captain and leader of their squad, played by South Carolina's own Chadwick Boseman. And they're also trying to locate a downed plane that was carrying a whole shitload of gold bars. And they locate both, spoiler alert, they locate both, but that only leads to more internal conflict plus external conflict. Other people are also wanting that gold.
Okay.
So my review was, the newest Spike Lee joint is powerful. Unfortunately, most people who would benefit from watching it probably won't, just due to its title.
Yeah. I heard that it was it had a lot to offer, a lot of good mm-hmm. things, but it was also a little messy.
Some points, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some big name actors in it, and I'm not recalling their actual names right now, but one of them is the guy from The Wire who says, "Shit." And it's his like trademark now, and he says it in the movie. I think it's part of his contract now that if he takes a job, he gets to say, "She."
It's like Sam Rockwell dancing.
Yes, exactly.
Before I do my last check-in, I'm going to pop open this beer. It's from Equilibrium Brewing. It's called Fluctuation, a perfectly unbalanced double IPA.
I bought a Equilibrium beer today, too. It wasn't that one, though.
Oh,
it
did was you, like MC Square?
No, it wasn't that one.
Hmm.
It was Wavelength. Ooh, that is tasty.
Oh, wow.
I think that given that it's a double IPA, the booziness is covered up by the hop profile.
Blast of fruitiness.
Yes.
It's a very soft mouthfeel on mm-hmm. this.
That's very tasty. You beat me again, you bastard.
All right, my last check-in will be a documentary that is available on HBO Max.
Okay.
It's called On the Record, and this is the documentary about Russell Simmons, L.A. Reid, and more to the point, the women who are brave enough to accuse them of their sexual misconduct. Right. And the main focus of this documentary is the young woman who came up through Russell Simmons' businesses and succeeded very well, but was squarely in his crosshairs on a sexual level.
Right.
And it was eye-opening for me because any woman who is brave enough to come forward and accuse someone of sexual misconduct, sexual mm-hmm. assault, sexual harassment, faces a lot of scrutiny. And it very succinctly points out the extra layer that African-American women go through in doing this. Because in that culture, you have the stigma of the aggressive black man. And so the overriding sentiment is, why are you doing this? Why are you bringing us as a people down?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you put a black man under the microscope even further? And that's further?
Probably one of the reasons that it's taken so long for these allegations to really get public mm-hmm. attention.
Yeah, it's very powerful, very moving, and I highly recommend this. This is probably the best thing I watched all week.
Nice. All right, well, I've got a documentary for my last check-in. This is number 223. It's called 2040, and it's from 2019. It's an inspiring documentary about a few of the things that we could do in the next 20 years so that we don't all die in a ball of poison fire.
Okay.
So it was a labor of love from the director, and you can look up the movie 2040. He spent 3 years making it, and it is a letter to his 5-year-old daughter about some of the things that exist right now that we could be utilizing to prevent the catastrophic breakdown of our ecosystem / society / infrastructure and everything. Things like eco-friendly farming, microgrids, like solar microgrids, some really, really great ideas presented in this film. And I really wish that everyone would watch it, including my dad.
I'll be sure to check it out.
All right. So does that wrap us up on the 2020 movie marathon for this week?
Let's do it.
All right. So that means we're going into the recast continued.
Part 2.
Double deuces.
Cattle rustling.
So the movie that we're going to be doing for this one is Buffalo Bill and the Indians, or Sitting Bull's History Lesson. And my review was, long story short, nobody learns the lesson. It's from 1976. It's got a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by the great Robert Altman. The story begins in 1885 with the arrival of an important new guest star in Buffalo Bill Cody's Grand Illusion, Chief Sitting Bull of Little Bighorn fame. Much to Cody's annoyance, Sitting Bull proves not to be a murdering savage, but a genuine embodiment of what the whites believe about their own history of the West. He is quite heroic and morally pure. Sitting Bull also refuses to portray Custer's last stand as a cowardly sneak attack. Instead, he asks Cody to act out the massacre of a peaceful Sioux village by marauding bluecoats. An enraged Cody fires him, but is forced to relent when the star attraction of his show, Annie Oakley, takes Sitting Bull's side. Altman was attempting to skewer the Western mythology with this film, as he had done with his previous film, MASH. This time, the notion of the noble white men battling the savage Native Americans. However, the film was poorly received at the time, in part because the nation was celebrating its bicentennial. Some of my favorite parts. One, when Buffalo Bill is walking through the camp with a black man and says, my father died trying to keep slavery out of Kansas. And he says, oh, really? He says, yeah. He figured if black people came in, they would just become slaves. So he fought to keep them all out. And that was partially true. I looked up a little bit about his father. He did fight against slavery in Kansas and was persecuted throughout his life. Actually had to move away from his family to stay out of danger. And also the final scene, spoiler alert, when Sitting Bull dies, Bill Cody doesn't know how to react to it. So he goes on a bender and ends up talking to who he believes is a Native American who was like the assistant to Sitting Bull. He's talking to him and ranting. And
Halsey.
Yes. This is why, blah, 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 blah. But we, as the viewers, we realize that that person is not there. He's talking to himself. And it's kind of prescient of the fact that the Native American culture and the Native American people were disappearing. Your thoughts on the film? You didn't care for it, I know.
I don't know why I didn't care for it. I just didn't really find the plot to be compelling. Buffalo Bill's Wild West show as the landscape to paint this picture of, mm-hmm. you know, what we should know about our past and our racism. It didn't make sense.
Do you think it was kind of contrived or too on the nose?
Yeah, that probably the on the nose, and just, I don't know, I just didn't enjoy it. And this is one of those rare occasions I didn't really care for Paul Newman.
Gotcha. Well, speaking of, we are going to get into the recasts. First, we've got William F. Cody, a.k.a. Buffalo Bill, played by Paul Newman, who was 51 at the time. And Buffalo Bill would have been approximately 40-ish at the time that this movie is set in 1885. Then we've got Geraldine Chaplin, a English-American actress. She's the daughter of Charlie Chaplin, the first of 8 children that he had with his wife, Una O'Neill. And she was 32 at the time. Then we've got, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Frank Kakewitz, who was 51 at the time, playing Sitting Bull, who would have been approximately 59 or 60. Because of the lack of records at that time for Native Americans, we don't know exactly how old he was, but approximately 59 or 60 years old. And then we've got Burt Lancaster playing Ned Buntline, who was, Burt Lancaster was 63, and the actual figure he was portraying was 64. And he's a journalist / orator who originally sought out Wild Bill Hickok and got his ass kicked by him, and then shifted his attention to Wild Bill Cody and writes about him early in the story. And then towards the end, in the third act, comes back up and wants to be part of the show again. But Wild Bill says, no, Annie hates you. Then finally, we've got Harvey Keitel. A young Harvey Keitel, a 40-year-old young Harvey Keitel.
I have him as 37.
Okay. As Ed Goodman. And this is the only fictional character in this movie. He's the relative of, or the nephew of, Buffalo Bill. And he's also partially an antagonist because he does not approve of the way that Sitting Bull is going about things.
He kind of fucks up a couple of times, yeah. too, and makes matters worse.
Definitely. So, that being said, who is your recast for Paul Newman as Buffalo Bill?
All right, let's see if you can guess my theme. I've recast this actor as Paul Newman before,
mm-hmm.
and now it's perfect because he's 51, as was Paul Newman. I'm going to go with the man from I Love You, Man.
Mm-hmm.
The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
The modern Paul Newman?
Ant-Man himself, Paul Rudd.
Nice. So my actor is 50 now. And I think that he's got the You know, the long blonde locks and the blue eyes. He can pull that off. He was in The Free State of Jones. He was in The Gentleman, Sahara, and The Dark Tower. He's the McConaissance. It's Matthew McConaughey.
Awesome.
All right, next up we've got Annie Oakley, who was portrayed by Geraldine Chaplin, who was 32 at the time, as we mentioned, one of the children of Charles Chaplin. Who you got for this?
Well, I went with an actress who is 30 years old. She was in the film Short Term 12.
I've seen that.
And she was in The United States of Tara.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in Room.
Yes.
I went with Brie Larson.
Yeah, Lady Marvel, Captain Marvel. Good stuff, dude. She's an amazing actress. My pick is an English-American actress who is 31 now. She was also in Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. She was in Tolkien. She was in The Mortal Instruments. She was also in one of my recent check-ins, Inheritance. She's the daughter of Phil Collins. Her name is Lily Collins.
I like Lily Collins.
Yeah. That's my pick. Nice. Plus, she's the daughter of, like, basically British celebrity god stature.
I get you.
You know?
I get you.
All right, next up, we've got the role of Sitting Bull. And at the time, he was approximately 59 to 60. The actor who was playing him, Frank Kakiewicz, was 51 at the time. And impress me.
I went with a 58-year-old actor. He is part Cherokee.
Okay.
He has been adopted by the Oglala Lakota Sioux tribe.
Ogallala.
Ogallala?
Yes.
Okay. I missed a letter when I was transcribing my notes. He was in Sisko.
Hmm.
He was in Young Guns. He was in La Bamba.
Oh, yeah.
With Lou Diamond Phillips.
Lou Diamond Phillips would be awesome in this, dude. I love him. Did you mention Dakota?
I did not.
Dakota is one of his best movies of all time. Okay, so my actor, he's one of my favorites in terms of Native American actors. He is 61 now. He was in Dances with Wolves as Wind in His Hair. He is also in Hawkeye, which is a television adaptation of Last of the Mohicans.
Okay.
And he was in Geronimo. His name is Rodney A. Grant. Rodney okay. A. Grant is going to be my pick for this. I know that face. All right, next up, we've got Ned Buntline, the journalist, played by Burt Lancaster, who was 63, and the actual person was around 64 at the time.
I went younger. I went with a 52-year-old. He was in No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Inherent Vice. He was in The Goonies. I went with Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin would be good, dude. We're just liking each other's picks too much. The dog agrees.
My dog wants to give its picks. Stand by for picks.
The final role that we're going to recast is the role of Ed Goodman, played by Harvey Keitel.
Wait, did you cast? You didn't do yours.
I didn't do mine? Oh, shit, you're right. Okay. My Ned Buntine is 61 now. He was in Army of Darkness, Bubba Hotep, and Burn Notice.
Fuck yes.
His name is Bruce Campbell.
I love it.
All right, so we've got one more, and it's going to be Ed Goodman, the relative slash nephew who's kind of problematic in the plot of the movie, played by Harvey Keitel. I've got him as 40 at the time, and who was your pick for this one?
This guy I've always said looked like Harvey Keitel in his early years. Let's see, you said Keitel was 37, or at least I think.
You've got him at 37, I've got him at 40, it's fine.
Well, this guy's 24.
Okay.
So I went way younger. He was in The Impossible. He is going to be in the film adaptation of the PlayStation video game series Nathan Drake. And people will know him as Peter Parker. I went with Tomas Holland.
Tomas Holland. A lot of people are really mad that Nathan Fillion didn't get that part.
Well, yeah, but he's kind of aged out of it.
Yeah.
But he was the guy they mo-capped and voiced. But,
yes.
Hey, you want to guess my theme?
Marvel actors?
They're Marvel actors. Believe it or not, Lou Diamond Phillips voiced Forge in the X-Men's Legends video game.
No shit.
There are about 8 Native American characters in the Marvel universe, and he is the only one that I could find that has been who has been committed to film.
That's awesome, dude.
So,
all right, so it's up to me now. My actor is 39. We've definitely chopped him before. He's a Chop Shop favorite. He was in The Dark Knight Rises. He was in Inception, Looper, and Don John. His name is Joey Gordy-Levi's.
Good pick.
Joey Gordy-Levi's is going to be my Ed Goodman in this. So, final thoughts.
Meh.
Your final thoughts are meh. I think that it is a particular time in history that is very meta. Because you've got this Wild West show that is a depiction of the things that had happened in the previous 30, 40 years. And now they made a movie about it in 1976. And people were watching at the time. It was the bicentennial. They didn't approve. Now we're watching it again in 2020 with a different perspective on a perspective of a perspective.
Have you ever seen Bronco Billy?
Oh, hell yeah.
Clint Eastwood?
Yes.
Another, it's kind of a takeoff on the whole Buffalo Bill.
Very much so.
Show.
Also, in the movie Groundhog Day, there's a scene where Bill Murray takes a girl to the theater and he's like, I told you, call me Bronco. And he's buying tickets and he's like, one adult and she's like, two adults? It's really funny. All right, so that brings us to our bonus segment, right?
True.
This is going to be a battle royale between some fictional Western characters. We've got Woody versus Quick Draw McGraw versus Yosemite Sam.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I love Quick Draw McGraw when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Loved Yosemite Sam. Sam, of course, was the victim of his own incompetence and frustration.
Yeah.
I have to go with Woody because he's...
That really burns my biscuits.
Yeah. Woody's level-headed and...
Altruistic.
Altruistic, absolutely. And I think that ultimately he's a survivor,
mm-hmm.
and I think Woody will win out in the end.
I'm going with Yosemite Sam because he's always armed.
I guess we should also say that Quick Draw McGraw does have the alter ego El Kabong.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
What is El Kabong?
It's like a bandit character.
That's awesome. He's like a bandito version of Quick Draw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's so fucking cool. I almost included Cowboy Curtis from the Pee Wee Herman show, but it's not the right time for that. All right. So I want to thank Chelsea for day drinking and not being here. I want to thank my co-host and co-producer, the engineer, the brew boss himself. Anything you got to plug this week?
We've got a lot of cans floating around for Seminar Brewing.
Nice. I saw the can Tan Lines.
Yes, exactly. Tan Lines you will find in your favorite beer stores around the state. And Pixels, of course, and Citrosity. So snap them up while you can.
And do you know what next week's episode is?
Oh, it's going to be a great one because we're going to be joined by our special guest, Knowles. It's the films of...
Mel Brooks.
Thank you, Mel Brooks.
In celebration of his 94th birthday... On June 28th, 1926.
Holy shit, he's 94.
94 and still kicking it, dude. He lives in the same retirement community as, oh shit, what's his name? So Meathead's dad.
Oh, Carl Reiner.
Carl Reiner. They're like old friends and they live in the same retirement community.
That's fantastic.
All right, so here is your sneak preview trivia question for this upcoming week's Right Answers with Wrong Travis.
Mel Brooks' second wife was this actress, director, screenwriter, and singer. They were married from 1964 until her death in 2005.
2005?
Mm-hmm.
It's What's-Her-Face from Blazing Saddles.
Hmm.
Right?
Nope.
No? Oh, shit. Then I don't know.
Are you trying to seduce me?
Are you?
It's Anne Bancroft. Anne Bancroft was Mel Brooks' wife from 1964 until 2005, a.k.a. Mrs. Robinson.
Good for him.
The Graduate.
Good for him. That's a catch.
For real. All right. We want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever podcatcher apps that you happen to be hearing us on. And I just ended that sentence with a preposition. Fuck you. We're hosted online on Podbean. It's cinemachopshop.podbean.com. We're on Twitter. We're at cinemachopshop, facebook.com/cinemachopshop, and our email is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. The beers that we checked in today will be checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And finally, farewell to you, the listeners. Thank you for receiving the telegraph. And please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.